London, part two. That's right. And we're talking about values. Is your cell phone ringing?
You want to tap it?
Yes, please.
He wants to tap it.
Oh, that's fine. She's welcome to do that. Bring it over and set it on the tabletop here. Values, part two. Everyone has values. The values come from the past, the values come from the present. The values are who we are. Now, I believe that all of you watching her establish her phone into a recorder are really learning a lot and paying a lot of attention to what we're doing. Now, give me your attention. Friends, Romans, countrymen, lend me your ears, eyes, and all of you. There was a great teacher one time, and he was called Socrates. And Socrates taught the sons of the legislators of the government. They were his students. They came to his place, the tree-laden fields of the park where they were, and they came to hear what he had to say. And Socrates taught these people continuously on one thing. He said, "Know yourself. Know yourself and know who you are. And live according to who you are and be who you are. Don't try to follow somebody else's point of view, but follow your own point of view. Now, your fathers and your people, your family and your friends and your relatives, because they were all legislators, and the children associated with legislators, you know, the princes were associated with princes, and they associated with each other. And so, Socrates brought many issues to their attention and let them make judgments. Let them come to conclusions about it for themselves. And one of the conditions of the day was that women were chattels and women were of no great value, except as mothers and wives or whatever like that. And so the boys would say, well, they're passing a new law in the Senate that a woman can never abort a child. And they were saying, well, a woman could not abort a child? What about if a woman were raped by some terrible person or some monster or some convict or some ugly circumstance? Couldn't she abort that child? Because she doesn't want that child. She doesn't want to be associated with that person. And the legislator said, no, she could not do that. And so then Socrates said to them, okay, now what if that woman that was raped like that was your sister? What would she do? Well, that's different. My sister could do whatever she wants to do. Oh, your sister can do whatever she wants to do with the other girls of the commoners in the world of our country. They can't do what they want to do. No, we set the law. We tell them what to do, you know. We tell them how to do it. And so Socrates talked to the young men and said, really, where are the values that we have in life? Are the values we have in life for us and not for others? Would we like to have a country filled with people who believed in and followed the same values, or that the commoners had one set of values and you, the legislative people, you, the royal people, so to speak, you had another set of values? Wouldn't that be an interesting nation to live in? Two sets of values. Well, of course, that's what the world is today, several sets of values in any country. But Socrates taught them to think about it. And he said, now, what would you think? If it were your sister, you said she could certainly abort a child. Now, what if it was somebody else? No, because the law says she can't. Well, the law should be universal. The law should be for everybody. It's not just special for some few who are privileged because they happen to be royal families and the on the legislative team. And so the boys went to tell their parents what Socrates had said. And naturally, that's what they were learning all day long. That's what they were doing. They were in school with Socrates. And so they told their father this. You know, Dad, Socrates says abortion's okay, and that we should allow abortion, and that abortion is as good for the low people as it is for the high people. Well, now, that's not what he said, did he? What did he say? Anybody? You can say it. He said, think for yourself. Come to your own conclusion. Decide for yourself. Don't just take what other people say, or don't take what the legislators say, or what the government says, or anything. Think for yourself. And if you're going to be legislators, think for yourself. Don't think of just what is or what other people want to have, but what do you think is right? Now, King Solomon was a great legislator, a great thinker, and what did King Solomon do? He definitely thought for himself, didn't he? He definitely made conclusions for himself, for the people. He was the arbitrator of the thought of the people. But he wanted the people to be honest, like Diogenes with his red and green lamp looking for an honest man. Solomon looked for people to be honest and be true. And when the two women came and said, this is my son, he said, okay, let's cut the boy in half and give you each half. And the real mother said, what? Let her have it. That's right. Let the other woman have it. No way. No way would she let that happen to her son. Now, what went on there? Was that a terrible thing? Or was that a most amazing bit of psychology, you know, being done? So the real person who was really responsible shines forth. Because it could well have been the other person's child, you know, but it wasn't. When we learn to think for ourselves, when we learn to use our mind and use our brain and use our wisdom, we come up with some pretty wonderful and pretty fantastic things. But only if we will be very careful. Only if we will say, I know that I know that I know, the divine in me knows the answer. Now, you have been raised by mother and father and relatives and teachers. They say, you say, oh, teacher, I know that. Oh, teacher, I know that. Oh, shut up. You can't know that. You're not smart enough to know. You're just a kid, you know. Well, what makes you think you know that? Well, before you have a chance to tell them what you really know, I guess I don't know it. I guess they're smarter than me. If they say I don't know it, I don't know it. So the very essence of your values that you have for yourself, that you think for yourself, that you are created from your own inner intuitiveness, is lost. And it fails to shine forth. It fails to come out like some beautiful beacon of truth. But when we have our value of, I believe in myself. I like me. I like everyone in my world. I think everyone is super califragilisticexpialidocious. I think everybody is a wonderful person. And I think everything that everybody does is just super. You think that people killing other people is super? No, that's not what I said. I said everyone is super. Now, if you had the opportunity to talk to people like Socrates did, would you have the strength to say what he did? And the answer is no. Because you say what the community says. You say what the world says. Okay. You have a son. Any of you got a son? Yeah. Here's one. You, three of you. Three sons here. Now, the government says, you go to war. Yeah, no is right. You go to war. So, what do you do? You say, I don't want my son to go to war. I don't want him to have the possibility of being hurt or hurting anybody else. You see, it's not just a one-way street. but it's hurting somebody else too. And you don't want that. Okay. So, you've been trained. Nothing you can do. God, country, and motherhood, you know. Those three we revere and honest, you know. Honor. And so, they come to you and say, your son has been selected by the draft. And you say, okay. You go into your quiet time, your quiet room, take your son along, and say, okay, son, I surround you with my pure white light of love, and I see everything in your world good and very good. I see you as the pure white light of love. I see you doing everything good and beautiful. I see you doing the things that please you and delight you and thrill you. Now, son, what would please you and delight you? Well, I would like to teach swimming. Okay, I see you teaching swimming right now. What would you like to do? Well, I'd like to have a farm or whatever, you know. And so I see you doing that right now. Now, that doesn't mean that you're going against the government, you're going against the communities, that everybody should go to war if they require that, you know. You just create them doing something different. Now, have you ever heard of the word 4F? That means you're not eligible for service because you got a broken leg or something like that, you know. You're not perfect in every way. And so you can't go into service. Well, now, there are a lot of people who are not taken into service who are in perfect condition. What's one of the things that service exempts people for? One of the things is, in years past, if they were a farmer, because they needed the crops, they needed the stuff that was made. And so if you were a farmer, you didn't go. And if you go, you can go and not be in the violent part of it, if that were the case. But I'm not saying there's an if or not if. You put a cause in motion that you surround your child, your son, with your pure white light of love, and he surrounds himself with pure white light of love. Whatever is for his highest and best, he experiences. Now, you don't say, and that doesn't include war, you know, because the minute you start saying it doesn't include war, then war is very dominant in your mind. And if war is very dominant in your mind, if that's something that's very positive in your thinking, then that's what you bring up. That's what you bring up. A woman who wants to get a divorce from a man who is abusive and not very pleasant to be with, and this can't be done. He won't give you a divorce. I had one couple, they were mature people, and the man was married for 20 years, and he and his wife just couldn't see eye to eye. And they separated, and his wife hated him with a passion and would not give him a divorce. So it's in Italy. And so he, Switzerland, Italy, in the border, and he couldn't get a divorce. And she was a free woman. She could do as she wanted. And she was living with him, and they wanted to have him be a free man so they could get married. And so I said to him, now look, you surround your wife with your pure white light of love, and you see your wife surrounded by young men who dearly love her and want to be with her, and they would love to get married with her. They just love to, you know, be her all and see her happy as can be and wanting to be happy. I can't do that. I don't want any good for her. I don't want anything nice to happen to her. She's terrible, terrible. I said, you've got to do this. You've got to release her, because you say she doesn't give you a divorce, you're not giving her a release from your togetherness, even though you're not living together anymore. You're still as much hatefully together as anything could be. Well, it took a week for me to talk to him and get him to think in that level of consciousness, but he did. He did. He said, okay, I will, you know, like that. Very gruff and very belligerent. And I said, all right, that's good. Well, 1 week later, his lawyer called him and said, your wife has signed the divorce decree, and you're free to be divorced now if you wish. You know, 1 week, and she and this man had been living together, waiting for the divorce to be done for years, always feeling dirty that he still was married. He had made a vow and he was not living up to it. I personally feel that if I were living with a person, and I wouldn't be living with them, but I mean, if I wanted to have a relationship with a person and they were still married, I'd wait till they were not married. Because they made a promise to somebody that they would be true to them. And you can divorce, you know, you can change it, that's okay. But if you're going to be dishonest with them, what are you going to be doing with me? You know, when we get together, are you going to be dishonest with me too? And go around screwing around with other people when you make a promise to me, you know? I don't know that I'd like that. And that is if I'm I only want one man, one woman in relationship, you see? Now, you say, well, Herb, that's kind of, you know? Well, no, really. All you have to do is, as I said, if you're separating, and I don't recommend separating, and I don't recommend staying together, I don't recommend marriage at all, I recommend being in love and being in unconditional love. And when you're unconditional love, then nothing else matters. If you get married, fine. But if you don't have unconditional love, then there's possession. And that possession keeps you from having a good relationship. Well, now, what do you want in your life? How do you want it in your life? Can you stand up for principle? Can you stand up for whatever you agree to do? I do many marriages. I perform many weddings. And I write the service myself. And I write the service after I talk to the couple of what it is they want to promise and betroth each other with. And most of them don't say, till death do us part. Because they don't want to think about death. They don't want to think about death. I will love you as long as I choose to, or I will love you. When you say forever, what's forever, you know? Does anybody know forever? Yeah. If you did, that's pretty good. But when you have a relationship, when you have trust, you see, these are values that we build up in our family. Now, if you come from a broken family, it's very easy for you to break your own family. And if you come from a family that has no values, it's very easy to just flit in and out of relationships. And that's tough. That's tough. Now, what is it for you? What are your values? And we're not talking about marriage relationship values or anything else, but just total values. What is your value? Is your value to be true to yourself whence thou art... When you are true to yourself, you can be false to no one. See, when you're true to yourself, you can only be true to everyone. And this is the kind of person I want to be, under all circumstances, and this is the kind of person I know you want to be, or else you wouldn't be in my world. Because I don't create people in my world who are people who don't have the same values that I do. And you say, well, I've had a divorce, and I've had this. That's not the point. That's not the point. Where are you now? Where are you now? If you would like another relationship with somebody, are you going to have a relationship just to possess them? Or are you going to have a relationship in which you share unconditional love? You share of yourself and you say, wow, you're the greatest. This is wonderful. Bye. You know? I say to people, if you're going to get married, your marriage should be in such a manner that you say to your husband, well, sweetheart, I'll see you. I'm going to take a trip around the world. I'll be gone a couple months. And he'll say, have fun. He won't say, now, what men are you going to run around with? What women are you going to run around with? No, he won't say that. He'll just say, have fun. You are a free spirit. He loves you. You love him the way you each are, not their manipulation and control of you because of your relationship. You both have the same values. You both have the same principles. You couldn't violate the principles even if you wanted to. That's your nature. And so he wants to go off and take a trip, and he wants to go to the Tahitian Islands for a couple of years and be a Tahitian, you know? And she says, okay, sweetheart, enjoy yourself. And he comes back a couple of years later, as pure a person as left, and he says, that was quite an experience, that was neat, you ought to try it sometime. You know? But could you be so unpossessed of the person who is in your life, you call a husband or wife, of someone in your life that is precious to you, that you could be possessed? Could you say to your child, go and have fun, I believe in you? You see, if you have that trust in yourself, then you have that trust in your family, in your child, in whatever. Now, we all, from time to time, have people in our lives that are give us a good test, and test is the word. They give us a good test, and in giving us this good test, they're causing us to act in a very unstable way. And because we act in an unstable way, it merely means one thing. It merely means we are not true to our values. You're not true, and your value is founded upon this statement, the law of cause and effect. The law of cause and effect says, any cause you put in motion, you're going to get an effect equal to it. Okay? Now, if you put a cause in motion like unconditional love, isn't that neat, huh? Just imagine, if everybody was unconditionally loving with everybody else, what a world this would be! Fabulous, you know? What a world it would be if everyone was unconditionally loving to everyone else. Boy. What if every mother said to her son or daughter or husband, I surround you with my pure white light of love. Go and have a wonderful day. What would happen? Peace on earth. What if before you ever sat down to any meal, you said, this food is healthy for my body and filled with love. That's all. No religious incantation, just a matter of this food is healthy for my body and filled with love. You're eating the food that's healthy for your body and it's filled with love. You're not going to eat things that are not really beneficial to you. You're not going to eat foods that are harmful to you. You're going to eat foods that are good to you. And you're going to say words that are good for you. And you're going to think thoughts that are good for you. When you can be master of yourself, then you always are doing it in that way. Now, I know lots of teachers, and all of you know lots of teachers. And you can have two teachers teaching the same age class, the same subject in an elementary school, for instance. You have two 8th grade teachers or 7th grade teachers, whatever they are, and one has one class, one another, indiscriminate. And so one teacher, the class is just obstreperous. They're always out of line. They're always being noisy and discourteous and disharmonious with the teacher. They're just miserable. And in the other class, the teacher walks into the classroom. They may have been alert, but when the teacher walked in, they all go to their seat and sit down and say, good morning, Miss Chioma, you know. And as they sit down and say, good morning, teacher, then the teacher says, good morning, class, quietly, not raising her voice, quietly. And she says, you always make me so proud of you. You know, you always make me so proud. I know that you're like this at home, too. And I know that your parents are proud of you, too. Because you are just, you're good kids. You're really fine kids, you know. Now, what is the other teacher saying to her class? Would you shut up? I want to teach you something. Will you be quiet? Are you like this all the time, being discourteous to your teacher, your mother, and your father, and your other students? Yeah, and how can a teacher ever teach you if you get a bunch of rattlesnakes in the class? Well, now, what's going to happen? They're going to rattle even more and become very, very discourteous and very, very bad. And the teacher is going to fill up the principal's office with her class. But who's at fault? Not the class, because the class is like the dog. They're looking for a leader. And if the teacher will go in there and be herself and be self-confident and be a leader, the class will be an exact replica of whatever she believes about herself. And this is the kind of class that you have, right? That's it. people you teach. And this is the nurses at your hospital, right?
Yes.
And these are the patients you deal with, right? You both are nurses, right? So these are the patients you deal with. Patients who are respectful, who respect you, who realize that you're nurses and this is how you treat them and work with them, and they say thank you, and they don't say, oh, you kill me, you don't ever come in when I call you, I ring the bell and you never answer it, and I'm doing this here, now where are you, where, help, 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 you know, and they don't really need anything, they just want attention. So you walk in there as the divine person that you are, and instead of taking out your thermometer, instead of taking out your shot, you take your hand and you gently put it on their forehead. You're not taking their temperature, and you say, oh, you feel so much better today than yesterday. You're doing, and they may or may not, doesn't matter. But they will feel better because you said they're doing better, and it's wonderful. And then you say, time for our bath. Well, don't say time for our bath. Say, now we're going to have that beautiful massage where I gently touch your body with the washcloth here and just wash away all of the feelings of aches and pains and so on. And when I get done, you're going to feel just like you're floating in a bed of wonderful clouds or cotton, you know. And what are they going to say? Oh, what a nurse. Oh, man, what a helper, what a whatever, you know. And the thing is, you, with unconditional love, respond to them, and they respond to you with unconditional love. And I tell you another thing. You don't do that because of this reason, but I'll tell you another thing. If you go around unconditionally loving, giving yourself to others as nurses or teachers or people, you will find that when your people decide to die, they will cut you in on their will. Now, that's not what you were doing it for, but they'll cut you in on their will. You know why? Because in all of their life, they have never been treated by someone who unconditionally loved them. Husbands or wives or children or family, they don't know how to unconditionally love. Now, this illustration might help you see what I'm saying. The woman is in the hospital, and she's terminal, and she's going to die. And her family come in and say, is there any way we can make mother more comfortable? In other words, kick her out a little quicker, you know, get rid of her a little sooner. Is there any way that we can make mother more comfortable? Anything we can do? And you, as a nurse, and as a philosopher, and as an unconditionally loving being, you say, what you can do for your mother is to go and tell your mother how much you love her and how wonderful she looks and how happy you are to see her looking so much better and how happy you are to see her whole and perfect now. And now, if you could get the family to say that to their beloved who was terminal, their terminality would cease. And they would continue living. But the family doesn't want them to live because they are accepting the principle that the mother is terminal, the doctor says so, the nurses say so, the hospital says so, so let's just get rid of her so we can go on living without having to come down to this damn place, you know, and play around in this hospital, sit and hold my mother's hand when she's, you know, going. But could you change it? Could you change it? Could you change it for yourself? Could you say to the family, it's not your business to say to them, but it is your business to be a nurse, which means you're a healer. Could you be a healer to the family relationship? Could you be a healer to the family attitude of let's get rid of mother, you know? Or could you be a healer to the relationship that says, mother, I love you. I want you to be with me as long as you can, and I want you to be with me in your healthy body and happy mind. Mother, I love you so. Hey, what would happen what would happen to Mother? She'd say, I think I'll delay taking off. I think I'll delay dying for another 20 years. And they do. I'm working with nurses in several different hospitals on this very thing. And these nurses are doing it. And they are coming to some absolutely fantastic conclusions. You know why they're coming to these conclusions? Because the nurses realize that they don't want the patient to die either. They want the patient to live as long as they can in a healthy, happy, hearty body. And when they choose to go, which could be any moment or a long time, that they go in a healthy body, in a healthy mind. Now, you are instrumental in helping them achieve that by working with their family and having their family respect the fact that just because Mother's terminal doesn't mean she has to die. It doesn't mean that. There's a new program out now, and it's called PHAGE, FAGE, or PHANG, something like that. I have the article in the Popular Science magazine, and for April. And in that, the Russians in what is Georgia, in Russia, for years, since in fact the 1920s, they have been using swamp water in a very special program to put it together with certain cells of your body to bring about a healing. And they've been quite successful for millions and millions of people. And what they do, they take this swamp water, which they have cataloged to blend with certain type of healing needs. I don't know how they do that, but it's quite, the article is interesting. It's 8 pages long if you want to read it. And it's quite fascinating. And they took a wound that would not heal, you know, and it just wouldn't heal. And so they took a scraping from it and put it into a vial of this swamp water and shook it a little bit. And then they dripped that solution onto the wound that wouldn't heal. And within 3 days, the wound had completely healed. And within a week, the swelling went down and everything went down back to normal. Now, that's amazing. That's utterly amazing. I'm telling you this not because you should run off and get that stuff, but they're using it on people who have diabetes and are amputating on their gangrene leg. They drop this on the gangrene leg and the leg returns to normal. And they've used it on cancer patients and the cancer has been dissolved. I mean, it's just utterly amazing. You cannot use it in America because the FDA says it has to be tested in certain ways before they allow it to be used. Unless the doctor wants to take responsibility that this is the terminal patient's last chance and they can do it. Or go over to Georgia. You know, go over to the Soviet Union, former Soviet Union, and let that particular group of people work with you as they do with millions of people. And be successful. Now, my point is this. It's a terminal person. That person's going to die because that wound is eating the body from the inside out. You know, and pretty soon they die, and they do. And cancer and other things that people have, that eats people up, and they die. And this material, this swamp water, with its bacteria, and that bacteria blended with the problem that they have and then dropped upon the wound, healing it, is most amazing. And again, I'm not saying that that's the wonderful thing. That is the wonderful thing. But that's not the wonderful thing. The wonderful thing is something happened and they were no longer terminal. The doctor says they were terminal because they were obviously terminal. They were going to die. But a new condition was put into position to change it all. Now, if you want to read the article on it, you're welcome to it. But the thing is, it's a new condition. Now, that new condition changed everything. Changed everything, just like our thoughts. Our thoughts can change everything, just like the children saying, "Mom, you look so great. Mom, you are fantastic. Mom, I love you. Yeah, Mom, oh, you are the greatest." You know, that's healing. That's healing. Now, just because someone's terminal doesn't mean they can't be healed. It only means that you have to treat it a little differently. That means you have to stop thinking it's terminal. You have to think there is an opportunity for them to be healed. And it's mental. It's mental. This thing here is physical that I told you about, but it's a mental thing. Now, heal yourself. Heal yourself. Do you have to grow old? Do you have to be aged? Do you have to lose your mental facility as you get older? People are no longer doing that. They're living longer in healthy bodies. Do you have to have problems that come with old age? No. Do you have to have problems that come with young age? Fantastic. My nurse who deals with the children, their preemies, she's telling me this morning how when she was dealing with them, they brought in a child, and after 3 days, the child developed influenza. A premature child developing influenza after 3 days. Well, she worked with this child and treated this child and did not think of it as terminal, as everybody else wanted to do, but she surrounded it with her pure white light of love. She did everything to make that child feel happy and successful and wanting to live. And of course, the child's fine. Just fine. I have sent many of you an article on this child that was in the hospital, twins. And one twin was not making it, and the other twin was doing just fine. They were both preemies, but they were in the hospital, and the one was dying. And so the nurses took the one who was doing so well and put it in the crib with the one that wasn't doing well, put its arm over the one in the crib like this. It was just a couple weeks old, you know. And instantly, the life signs, the vital signs changed from, you know, straight lines sort of stuff to flowing, moving, living, dynamic beingness. And the child now is just fine. But its sister, giving it of that love energy, and the sister didn't even know what she was doing it, perhaps. And maybe she did. Maybe more of that than we know. But they put this little girl with her sister, and her love, her presence, her self. Now, the mother didn't help, because the mother did what? What did the mother do? She thought the kid was going to die. It was terminal. That's what the doctor said. What did the father say? The father took the child in his arms. "I'm so sorry, you're going to die. Oh." And the little sister, what'd she do? "I love you, you're warm and snuggly, I'm your sister," you know. And it didn't say that, but that was the idea. And that love was the healing agent and brought forth that child from death to life just by the presence. Now, we're dealing with something so fantastic, we have to get rid of some of our old values that tell us we can't do that and shouldn't do that, and get some of our new values that say, when we put the cause in motion for purity and goodness and wonderful qualities like that, we get those wonderful qualities. Now, are you ready for that in your life? And you know, each one of you have had some pretty serious circumstances in your life with people that you've known, with your mother and father and sisters and brothers and aunts and uncles and cousins and whomever. And you worried about them. You worried about them. Well, now that's the worst thing you could do. Don't worry about them. They're free to do what they want to do. Now, what do you want them to do? You want them to live or die? Now, her daddy went through an experience that was kind of tough recently. And, pray for me. I'm not going to pray for you. I know for me. You're whole and perfect. There's nothing to pray for. You're fantastic. Every organ, action, function of your body is perfect right now. That's how I see it. You see, I'm not going to worry. I'm not going to be anxious. I saw him perfect. And I told him, pick up your bed and walk. You know, I told him, you're okay. You're okay. And, but he's okay, isn't he? Fantastic. He's okay, isn't he? Yeah. I know he's okay. Yeah, so, you see, but this is the point. We worry. We worry. Yeah. I could name other illustrations which are equally as bad. But, you know, with Hugo. But the thing is, that's stupid. The worry. The worry kills people. Like my dear friend that I told you about. The 91-3-year-old lady, you know, going to live with this guy, and he did everything for her. And there's no motivation to do anything. I didn't worry about her. I left her free to do what she wanted to do. But that woman could have lived to be 1,000 if she wanted to. But she had to have motivation to live. And he took all the motivation away by being so loving and being so generous and being so helpful and stuff like that. Now, we have an 84-year-old woman on campus, lovely lady. She comes in the room and she waddles like a duck sometimes, you know, acting like an old creature. And I say, Ingeborg, come here! And I grab her and I dance with her and, oh, she dances nice, you know. And so we danced around the room and she's not waddling like a duck. She's dancing like a lovely lady. And we have a wonderful time. And as long as I'm dancing with her, as long as I'm motivating her, she forgets to waddle. But the minute I let go, she goes back to making sure she doesn't fall, making sure that everything's okay. Now, why? Why? I haven't talked to her about this yet, but why does she worry about falling? Because some people are talking about older people fall and they break a leg and they do something, and if they break a leg and do something, then things are just not going to be happy for them. And who's telling them this? Who's telling them? People who don't know beans from the apple cart, you know? And that's so silly, isn't it? Because old people don't have to fall. And if they fall, they don't have to, you have weak bones, you know, your calcium is gone, your this and that is gone. But it's gone because you are teaching them to take vitamins. I think if we could take all the vitamins away from people, take all of the things that people think that they need away from them, and make them rely upon their body's natural chemistry department to provide all the chemicals that is needed to produce. A little child has everything in it. It has all the factories in it to produce all the enzymes and the vitamins and the proteins and the chemicals and the minerals, all necessary for the body, and how to distribute it in perfect way. A little tiny kid come, a little egg, a little sperm get together, so tiny. It's got all that mineral in it and all that vitamin. And well, that came from the milk from the mother and these stuff. No way. No way. That came from their own body manufacturing plant. Their own body manufacturing. Why did the body stop growing at a certain age? Why did the body stop manufacturing at a certain age? It stopped manufacturing because it had been fed so much on the outside that it felt it didn't have to do it anymore. And because it felt it didn't have to do it anymore, then all those natural chemicals within the body necessary for its harmonious functioning stopped being created by their own manufacturing plant. Fantastic. Now, if we, and it's not too late, because any moment of our time is the right time, we can say to ourselves, I am ideal right now. Not I'm ideal woman, because then you think what a woman is, or I'm ideal man, or I'm ideal human, or I'm ideal being, or I'm ideal mother, I'm ideal father. You see, those things, anytime you think of saying those things, what you're doing is you're saying whatever your image of a father is, or image of a mother is, or image of a woman is. And that's a limitation. Because your and my image of a person is silly. Have we ever seen the ideal man or ideal woman? Even the great sculptors that we look at and say are so beautiful, they're not ideal. Who knows what the ideal is? We know it's good. Okay, if you say, I am ideal right now, every organ, action, function of my body is perfect right now. I live in my ideal. We are now putting in a new set of values for ourselves, which values will be the values we live by, which values will be the values that our body will live by, which values will be the values that say, okay, Mom, you look great. Mom, oh, you are so wonderful. Mom, oh, you feel so good. Mom, oh, you're coming along so beautifully. I'm so happy about you. Mom, you want to dance? And what does she do? Mentally, she sees herself dancing. The first step to getting up and doing it, you know? The first step to getting up. Little children watch their parents dance, and they see it, they mentally have an idea of it, and then they get up and dance. This Ibu Bey here, he came to our house, and we turned on the video for him on Barney, and he watched Barney. And so what did he do? Every time Barney would dance, he would dance. Now, I don't think his mother taught him how to do that, did you? I don't think anybody taught him how to. He just picked it up because he saw it. And he danced beautifully. He danced as well as any of the paid actors on the script of Barney. Beautiful. Because it was natural for him. Now you say, well, you know, us blacks, we have naturally good dancers. Well, no, you aren't. You are naturally uninhibited. That's true. And that's beautiful. That's what makes you a good dancer. Because you don't say, I cannot. You just say, I can. And then you go and do it. And that's the beauty of it. If everyone in the world could just say, I can and I do. Now, just mentally, take yourself around the world and stop at the Polynesian Islands, stop up in the Scandinavian countries, stop over in China and Japan, stop over in America and down South America and Europe and wherever in the world you want. And think of, if you can, of tribal peoples, of peoples who have customs, who have, like the Scandinavian people, they have certain dances they like to do, you know. And like down in Africa, you have certain dances that are common to different tribes. And how do the kids pick it up? They watch everybody else, and then they do it too. It is beautiful. It is just beautiful when you see how easily they enter into this. Now, at the same rate, if you were to feed them virtually nothing, we spoke about this another time, scientists have done experiments with mice, and they found that if they give mice a near-starvation diet, that they will live 7 times a normal lifetime, and at the 7th normal lifetime, they are reproductive as well as they were on the first lifetime, which is quite spectacular. Because you've got to say, now, our lifespan has been 70 years, now it's around 100. Okay, now 700 years old and still having children and still being as vital, dynamic, alive as you were at 100, you know, at 40 or 50 years old or whatever it is. You see, when we begin to be master of our values, when we begin to be master of our attitudes, we begin to be master of who and what we are, magical things happen to us. And magical things will always happen to us as long as we're master. But magical things happen to us when we're not master too, when we give up. Because then we do magical things like dying, which is not normal. To live eternally is what the Bible has taught us, the philosophers teach us, and the scientists teach us. If a scientist can take a cell and put it in a petri dish and keep it, feeding it so that it continues and perfect, it will live and without limit. It'll live forever. Now, you say, that's fantastic. But that's true. Our bodies will live forever. But we tell our bodies that we will die. We tell our bodies, emotionally, that we're unstable. We tell our bodies that we're unhappy, and then this unhappiness goes through every cell of our body. Each one of us has something very special. Each one of us live in a body that has something very unique and very wonderful. And you may not have heard about it. Had you heard about it?
Yes.
What's it called? Now, don't give me any discussion. What's it called?
What's it called?
What kind of cells is it called?
Stem cells.
Stem cells. That's right. Stem cells. You see, science has found out that in our brain, every day, are born 10,000 brand new, undifferentiated stem cells, which are used like in a baby, to create the eyes, ears, nose, and throat, or whatever it is. Undifferentiated, they're not told yet what they're going to do. And they're up here. Okay, you and I have this big army of stem cells in our brain. And the army of stem cells is made up of fabulous, precious, beautiful, ready to move stem cells. And they say to you, okay, I'm here. What do you want me to do? And you say, oh, I haven't time to tell you. I'm too busy. But don't you stop. And you say, okay, stem cells. For a while, I have lived in a body that expressed negative attitudes, and I don't want to express negative attitudes anymore. I'm going to express... Now, you don't say that to them, because if you say that to them, you confuse them. But you say it to yourself, perhaps. And so then you say, okay, stem cells, this is what you will do today. You will march through my body and see every organ, action, and function of my body perfect. Now, so as the stem cells march through your body and work in your body like a pollinating of the bees and so forth, then every cell of your body is like this flange that is put in on there. It purifies it. It purifies everything, returns it to its original purity and integrity. But, more than that, the medical science has taken stem cells, and this is in the Wikipedia encyclopedia of the internet, as well as newspapers and magazines and medical journals all over the world. This is not something that is unfounded, it is something proven. Okay. They have taken stem cells and inserted it in the liver of a rabbit or a mouse or whatever they did. And that rabbit or mouse had a liver that was diseased. And they put the stem cell in that liver. And that liver completely revitalized itself, returned to its original purity and integrity, and was healed. You say, wow, if that is the truth and that is really what happened, why don't they do it for everybody? Well, because they're working on it. And they have to spend maybe another 30 years before they tell themselves it's okay to do it on humans. But some people are not concerned like that. And over in China, the medical doctors there are working with stem cells and using stem cells and inserting them directly into the brain of a child or something like that. And with the many cases they're dealing with, they don't give them all publicity that is for us to know about, and healings take place in a most spectacular fashion. But it takes a change in their values to do that, because a mother and father who have a child who need to have some special thing happen, and they take the child to a foreign country and give it to foreign agents, like the Chinese are to the English-speaking people, and say, do your thing. They're anxious, and they try, but they're anxious. And their anxiety keeps the healing from being as absolute as it could be. Now, really, if you have a condition that's coming up like that, it is better for you to take the person and have someone who believes in it to go with him and have it done. They had so many illustrations of these things, of where great and wonderful healings have taken place, and have taken place by people who are spectacular and unusual. You probably have read Orego with the Rusty Knife, Surgeon with the Rusty Knife, down in Brazil. And he would work on people, and he would help them with their illness, and he'd take this Rusty Knife and just clip it off and throw it out, and they'd get up and go on and be completely healed. And he said some medical doctor psychically was working through him. Now, medical science went down and found that what he said was true. What he did was true. And it was valid. And then all of a sudden, you don't hear any more about it. Now, why don't you hear any more about it? Because he's not doing it to prove something. He's doing it because it's in his nature to do it. And he doesn't need publicity. He doesn't need the world to know what he's doing. Just like Jesus did all of his things. He didn't need the world to know what he was doing. He said, go and tell no one. Remember? Go tell no one. And the people went out and talked. They told people. But truly, when you help a person to be aware of returning to their original purity and integrity, what you're doing is you're doing some special project that is so magical, so wonderful. You are changing the values of their life. And of course, in the process, you're changing your own values too. Because your own values are coming to the idea that, hey, this is possible. This is wonderful. This is spectacular. This is something that we're all involved in and we all want to be aware of and we all want to utilize. This is something that really, as you think about it, and as you put this cause in motion, you're going to have some very wonderful experiences for yourself. I've given you a little bit of information on this, and I've talked to you a little bit about the values of yourself, and how you can readjust your values if you want to, and how you can be an instrument for peace if you want to. Dr. Thelma, whatever her last name was, she's a medical nurse. She's a nurse in New York, and she was head of the nursing system in New York when I was at the Menninger Foundation working on alternate states of healing. And she came to tell us that her work was to teach nurses in hospitals how to lay hands on the patients, not to heal them, but to lay hands on the patients to change their mental attitude about themselves, to let them know that they are cared for, to let them know they are loved, to let them know that life is beautiful. And it was absolutely fantastic. She did some amazing things. So, I say to you now, we'll see you tomorrow, but go forth and apply this. Demonstrate this in your life. Don't just listen and hear it, but use it and watch. It works. It works.
Yes. It is.
So,
it is.
Have a lovely evening and know I love you very much.
I love you too. Thank you.